to this special bonus episode of Must See Matches. I'm Kieran LaForte, and joining me, as always, the man behind Must See Matches, Mark Buckledy. Mark, how are you?
I'm good. I've back from my travels, and I've been doing some fighting detecting.
Yes, you brought something with you. And we have somebody with us who knows a bit about fighting and detectives, and the legal profession, according to his shirt that I can see on camera. Eamon Bell is back. Eamon, how are you?
I'm good, guys. I'm good. Battling a little bit of flu. Mm-hmm. But I feel like this is going to be like my Michael Jordan flu game. Normally I would have said no, but when Kieran sent me the message for this match in particular, I couldn't say no.
Yeah. And does this mean you're going to lose the Intercontinental title to the Mountie?
No, but it just means I'm going to make like imaginary vendettas in my head against the two of you to motivate me to get through the rest of the podcast. So it'll be fine.
So the match we are going to be talking about today is Fuminori Abe versus Takuya Nomura from Kakadu Tanteden, We Are Fighting Detectives, October 12th, 2023. A match that exploded my timeline as soon as it was over. And if you heard our last episode, you'll know that Mark was there live. So Mark, I want to ask you a bit about like the live experience, the atmosphere, because it's in Shinjuku Face, isn't it? This is a place we've both been to before. Talk about the experience of being there live.
So the initial experience was getting there thinking that show was starting at 6, and it turned out the show was starting at 7.
Lovely.
So having to kill time around Shinjuku.
Panicking. Make sure you walk in the right direction, yes. Or there are some very interesting ways to kill time north of Shinjuku.
And if things don't go well, other things might get killed as well, sadly. Panicking because they couldn't find my ticket initially. Good. They eventually found it. And then sharing a lift with what I imagine was the only white guy at the show who had a massive black eye that I was trying not to talk about. And it turned out this gentleman was actually in Japan training and wrestling for Just Tap Out.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. And a black eye is what you get if you don't tap out, I guess.
I didn't catch his name, but he had initially trained with the Maximos.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Right in New York, and then just went to Japan and just training in the dojo. Yeah. I assume the black eye was an accident. I didn't ask.
Oh, hello, sir, if you're listening to this.
Yeah. The 1-2 punch of he's training at like Just Tap Out and he was previously trained by the Maximos is making me think this guy's going to end up being like my favorite wrestler. He's going to do 6 submissions and knockouts, and then he's going to do like, he'll do a shoot Spanish fly is what he'll do.
Yeah.
I am already obsessed with this person. I'm going to rewrite my must see matches ballad. Look up his cage match.
The show, they'd announced that basically there were no more tickets. Mm. And I had never seen Shinjuku Face this rammed. There was about 452 people there. Mm. I didn't see a single empty seat by the time the second match had started. Mm. And I've never seen that many seats on the stage before. It was packed.
It's not a very big venue at all. If you are a British fan and you are familiar with Broxbourne Civic Hall, it's approximately the same size as that. I think it doubles up as a nightclub, and what they've done is the dance floor, they've just kind of sunk it in the middle of the building so they can also put a ring in there.
Yeah. And the thing people don't realize with Japan is Tokyo's quite weird in that it has a few venues that I would say are in the 300 to 400 range. Mm. Shinjuku Face, Shinkiba, I think, can be up to that.
Then if you're very, very friendly with everybody else in there, yes.
Okay, so maybe a little less for Shinkiba. So it's got low 200s, it's got mid-hundreds. And then I think it's actually got a gap until Korakuen, which is 1800.
Yeah, pretty much.
And then you've got maybe one or two that are a little bigger, and then you're getting into the 5,000 to 10,000 brackets. So actually,
I think, like, you've got like Ota Ward Gym, I think, is in between. Like, I think that's 4,000 fully packed out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's this gap between Shinjuku Face, which is, and then the next step is Korakuen.
Yeah.
Now, that's offset for companies running a business, because Kurokan is infamously cheap to run.
Yes.
Like, I could pay to run a show in Kurokan kind of level.
Whether you make your money back is a is another matter entirely.
I was going to say, and we're happy to announce, mostly matches produce.
Nah, mate, the wrestlers would bankrupt me.
Yeah, so this is not affiliated to any company, is it? This is this is an Abe produce show, right?
This is Abe's first ever produce show. It was technically an Abe and a Nomura produce show,
of course.
And honestly, this was inspired by their love of battle arts. Mm-hmm. It was very much the style is battle arts, the branding is battle arts. The wrestlers on the card, you had guys like Ikuto Hidaka, like oh god, what's his name?
Panamsak Toba.
Oh no, Toba is not a a battle arts guy.
No, but it was a weird announcement given how we've talked about him previously on DD Teach, and we barely talked about him on there.
Yeah. Yeah, so guys like Minoru Fujita was former battle arts. You've got
Yes, he is.
Yuki Ishikawa and Daisuke Ikeda.
So Hikaru Sato a battle arts guy?
No, he was more pancrase, but he would do some battle arts, but
around that just because he strikes me as a guy who would fit in very easily with them.
He'd fit in, but he did more of the hard hit, which was DDT shoot style offshoot.
Right.
You had Keita Yano, who was a battle arts guy originally. So you had a lot of battle arts affiliated guys, including referee Marty Asami, which is...
I did wonder how he fitted in.
He wrestled for a lot of Japanese indies before joining New Japan in the early 2000s, and battle arts was one of them. And then you had guys like Yuizuka and Hideki Suzuki, who are of that style.
Mm.
And then you had Brother Yashi,
who was great on this show.
Yeah.
We kind of covered this a little bit on our last regular episode when we were talking about your trip in general. And what I said was, people forget that Brother Yashi used to be Stevie Brother Sugimoto, and he started in T2P, which was like a load of wacky submissions.
Yep. So in terms of the atmosphere of the show, this was very much, it felt like everyone who'd paid a ticket knew who Abe was. Everyone that paid a ticket came for him.
This is not just the Tokyo Hardcores. This is like, I mean, this is hipster pro wrestling, really, isn't it? Like, this is the hardest of the hardcore, I think.
Yeah.
And maybe, like, Abe's mum.
Yeah, you had that, and it was... you could actually see that there were groups of fans that were recognising each other just before the show was starting.
Right.
So it was clear that a lot of these fans kind of were in groups and then knew other groups and were chatting.
Not that dissimilar to showing up at a British indie.
Yeah, it had that Britress element if the Britress audience was at least 10 years older on average. Because I would have put the average age for this crowd at least 40, 45.
Right.
It was an older audience, but they, you know, this is their thing. They loved it. And they got into everything. They were into the wrestlers. There was only one match that struggled, and that's because Super Tiger shit.
Yeah.
There was a surprise appearance of Fujita Jr. Hayato, and as soon as he came out, everyone was just so happy to see him.
Mm-hmm.
And he just got a massive reaction. And the audience was really into the match, the show throughout, but they stepped up for the main event.
Sure.
And they were just... It was that mix of they were loving the violence, they were laughing at it, but laughing at it in the kind of I've watched something horrific kind of way. And they were fully into it. I think it was a bit louder than it came across on the show.
Mm.
But yeah, it was a fantastic experience. And for 2 hours of entertainment, it was just cracking.
Oh, yeah, it's sped by. Like, the whole thing is done in 2 hours. The version, I don't know if they've gone back and done an edit because I saw extra cameras at ringside, but the version that went out live and the version I have watched is just the hard cam.
Yeah.
A moving hard cam. It's not just, like, a locked-off shot. The guy is, like, getting close-ups and stuff. So I don't know if they've gone back on Wrestle Universe and added in footage from the other cameras to kind of spice it up a bit. No commentary. So it was like having a seat in the building. Which I kind of quite liked.
I think all that production, the the single camera, the no commentary, it adds to it feeling even more kind of gritty.
Yeah.
And like you were saying, Kieran, that sort of hipster element, the people who would be going to this, it's a very self-selecting audience, I think.
Mm. Yeah, very much so.
This is not a thing for everyone necessarily, right? The type of people who would be excited about hearing, oh, there's going to be this almost sort of battle arts reunion show, it's a very specific type of wrestling fan.
Yeah.
And I really hope part of what happens with this match is that it breaks through a bit into people who maybe wouldn't watch that type of thing normally.
Yeah, yeah. So something we should point out, these two are usually tag team partners.
Yep.
Best friends, tag team partners. I don't know if Eamon, if you can help us out here. The team is called Astronauts. Can you give us a background on the guys, on the team, anything like that? I have come in like as a noob and a novice here when it comes to these two, really.
Yeah, I think Astronauts to me are far and away very comfortably the best tag team in the world.
Okay.
Like, all due respect to guys like Workhorsemen and Violence is Forever, and then considerably less respect to like FTR and the Young Bucks. But to me, it's been these guys, and it's probably been these guys for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Big Japan have actually probably been one of the two places in the world that I would say just creates these great tag teams, because before Astronauts, Strong BJ were the best Japanese tag team for a long period of time.
And especially because a lot of, especially like companies that do a lot of heavyweight stuff, the tag teams a lot of the time are sort of a means to an end for singles wrestlers, right? Like, we're going to have them in a tag team.
Yeah.
And then with the goal of like, one of these guys will be a main event, like New Japan, you know, the biggest company. How often have you ever felt like the tag division in New Japan is particularly important?
Oh, people have complained about the state of the New Japan tag team for two decades at this rate.
Yes.
And the Booker's a tag wrestler.
Yeah. It's a slight tangent. It has always baffled me that Gedo, who spent his entire life as a junior heavyweight tag team wrestler, cannot book either of those divisions in his own company.
Yeah, but... And then, aside from that, they're both amazing singles wrestlers, too. Fuminori Abe is maybe the... And actually, both of them, right? These are guys who put together wrestler of the year cases, tag team of the year cases, match of the year cases, and... Based on just this show, yeah, I think they have an argument for bookers of the year cases. Because the hit rate, right, is they did what I think is the best show of the year. And if, you know, all you need is one good and no bad. So that's 100% hit rate. But yeah, they've wrestled each other a few times. Not to spoil it too much, but this is the first time Abe has beaten Nomura.
Sure.
And... He's usually like a little smaller than Nomura. They've kind of evened out a bit over the years. Nomura is probably like in kayfabe the more successful one as well, I would say.
Yeah.
So he's sort of the junior, and this was his moment of kind of breaking through and taking the spot as the number one. But they still feel very contemporary, obviously, to each other. I wouldn't say like one is necessarily ahead of the other.
Sure.
And a very fun thing about the team is that I feel like there's a lot of division between who people agree on as the best member of the team.
Mm-hmm.
Nomura, I think of as being maybe a little more straight-laced, whereas Abe is a bit sillier.
I think that comes out in this match, actually, at various points.
Oh, yeah. Like, when he, like, bites Nomura, when he, like, sticks his finger up his ass.
Yeah. 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 Thanks for giving that away before we get to it.
Yeah. Shoot style lives in bad words.
Hey, it's what you would do in a fight if it got you out of a hold.
Abe is the quirkier one, but that's because so much of that is taken from his mentor, Munenori Sawa, who was a battle arts trainee, who was also the guy that did the lingerie Muto gimmick from the 2000s.
Yes.
Which, if people haven't heard of it, was Wrestling like Keiji Muto while wearing lingerie on your head and your body.
Yes.
And he brought the gimmick back a couple of weeks ago in one of the Mochizuki Produce Buyuden shows.
Yeah. Incredible.
So if people want to see what that looks like, there's a recent example.
Mm.
And just to mention about Battle Arts itself, Battle Arts is such a great promotion to watch. It has like what I think of as kind of Tekken energy.
Yeah.
In that it is this kind of shoot style, right? But it's not as hardcore as something like Rings or Pancrase.
No, it is. So it is pro wrestling if it was a sport is the best way I can describe it, but not shoot. Does that make sense? Like, it's not shoot style. It's I hesitate to say it's what pro wrestling should be, but like,
yeah, no, I know what you mean. This is a combat, but all of pro wrestling is just almost like just different combat styles.
Yeah.
Like, you have like your strict shoot guys will show up, but then you could stick it on and like Great Sasuke will be there.
We've talked about it before on a show. I don't know if, I can't remember if you were on. Fucking Road Warriors showed up in Battle Arts.
There's a 90s Battle Arts show with Jeff Hardy on it.
Yes. It's like all of these styles are, legitimate is not the word I'm looking for.
But viable, right? Like in the, Everyone is welcome.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. Within this universe, all of these styles are accepted viable styles.
Yes.
So Lucha holds just as much weight as Strong Style or King's Road or American pro wrestling, you know?
Yeah. Like Ishikawa is obviously such like an Inoki fan, which you get from like seeing him for 2 seconds. But yeah, he'll mix it up with anyone. And like you get these like amazing sort of variety shows, but a very specific type of like it is variety within a specific genre.
Sure.
And it is wrestling that's very much about where the focus is wrestling.
Yeah.
And again, we talk about self-selecting audiences. I think also again, this is why it's maybe not for everyone. But I don't mean that to come across as elitist, but also maybe I do a little bit. if we're being honest, because like there's lots of different types of wrestling fans. Mm. There are, and you know, some of them are the people who like talk about like wanting their story.
Mm.
And it feels sometimes when they talk about that, the wrestling itself is a thing to sit through to get to the next bit of plot.
It's the Hollywood blockbuster thing, you know.
Yes.
The action scenes don't communicate any part of the story. They are scenes that get in the way of the plot.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like playing like a video game and you just want to get to the next cutscene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the gameplay itself is something to be endured.
Yeah.
And then also what they consider to be stories that are interesting.
Yeah. So they're Final Fantasy fans.
Listen, all right, let's have a side conversation about
we'll take that off topic.
We're already 20 minutes in and we only move we've talked about is a finger up the ass.
The Final Fantasy 8 Junction System Defender has logged on and he is ready to but yeah, so all of this is just to kind of set up, right? Like you have people who are very into like their entrances and their finishers, like maybe people staring at their hands, and like there is a bit of staring at their hand in this, but it's because Nomura just punched Abe too hard in the head.
Yes.
Yeah.
And like if something like that sounds compelling, like this is the wrestling you should take a look at. And if you, again, I think the people who listen to a podcast like this and watch the matches you guys talk about, because I think a great thing you guys do in Must See Matches is spotlighting lots of different types of great pro wrestling.
We've said it since the beginning, like the strength of this project has been the variety of things we've been exposed to and got nominated enough to be talked about on this show. If we'd have changed the cutoff point, we wouldn't have talked about the Ikeda Ishikawa match. We wouldn't have talked about the Thunder Queen battle, we wouldn't have talked about
Nagayo versus Matsumoto.
Yeah,
was another one.
What was the other UWF one we did?
Nakano versus Funaki.
Yeah, and all of these are great, fantastic wrestling matches, all of different styles. You know, equally, we wouldn't have talked about Kenny Omega versus Tetsuya Naito, and we wouldn't have talked about Shawn Michaels versus Mankind. No.
Yeah.
Yeah. All of which hold the same amount of weight, if you like, in the amount of nominations they got.
And I think that almost reflects the Battle Art spirit, right? Mm. Everything is welcome. Everything is equal. Look at these different varieties. Mm. And Battle Art is such a great flavor of pro wrestling.
Go out there, enjoy yourself, punch someone in the face. That's all you need. Yeah.
And if you can't punch your best friend in the face as hard as you can, who can you? Yeah. Just quickly, Kakuto Tanteden does indeed translate as fighting detectives, even though my pronunciation is well off. I don't know why this name has been used, because since technically they're fighting astronauts. It sounds like a great name for a team. Detective is an underused gimmick in wrestling, I think. Somebody call Alan Kuroki.
I was going to say Detective Alan Kuroki.
Unless he's popped up on the undercard of some rando indie show I went to in Tokyo, I don't think I've ever seen Nomura live. I did see Abe in a 10-minute six-man on the undercard of an All Japan show in January 2020, teaming with current RevPro/New Japan star Francesco Akira and Koji Iwamoto to beat Black Mensa Ray, Masahiro Takanashi, and Kagetora. And I remember his stuff with Kagetora being the highlight of the match.
Very briefly, both these guys debuted around the same time. So as I said earlier, Abe was heavily influenced by Munenori Sawa, which is not a surprise because they're both friends and they work together, because Sawa and Abe work for Ikuto Hidaka at Hidaka's fitness center.
Okay.
Of all places. And also, Abe is...
Enter those three as a team in New Year's Trio Shuffle.
Oh, yeah. Abe is also a legitimate Buddhist monk, and I believe that he was involved in the ceremony for Hana Kimura's funeral.
Wow.
So Abe had one nominated match, which was a 2020 match against Yuya Aoki, who is the current Big Japan heavyweight champion, I believe. The strong division heavyweight champion. Nomura was trained by Hideki Suzuki, who himself was trained by Billy Robinson.
Right.
And you can, not only can you see elements of that, but at one point, I'll call it out, Nomura actually used a move that Robinson would often go to gyms and teach to other grappling people. So it was like, he's got a kickboxing background, which you can probably tell from the amount that he does spine kicking in this match. And as Eamon hinted, he is the guy with more singles experience, because he was the Big Japan strong heavyweight champion for about 100 days. And he had some very well acclaimed matches against Yuji Okabayashi, one of which got nominated for the project.
Cool.
And the last thing, Astronauts is supposedly a reference to the Antonio Inoki Universal Fighting Art Organization known as UFO.
That makes so much sense that it's an Inoki thing.
One final thing before we talk about the match itself, the rules. No pins, submissions and knockouts only. Japanese wrestling usually has a 20 count on the floor, but here it's 10 and it counts the same as a down count for a knockout. So similar to old British wrestling, if you are out of the ring for the referee's count of 10, you are deemed as being knocked out and you're done. So at the beginning, they are each presented with a bunch of flowers before the bell. And because he's being a gentleman and helping out, there is a moment where it looks like Nomura is going to get his from this attractive young lady and Abe will receive his from referee Marty Asami.
Listen, it's a small budget show. People have to do multiple jobs.
Yes, yes. And Marty's was holding a bunch of flowers for a couple of minutes. As we kind of mentioned, like, Abe isn't afraid to fight a little dirtier and be a bit more tricksy. So he immediately tries to throw Nomura off with some little, like, distracting hand fakes. He covers Nomura's mouth to gain an advantage on a reversal. He's also the first to use strikes, chopping his partner across the forehead while in a headlock on the mat. And in fact, as Eamon alluded to, he gets out of this same headlock by biting Nomura's ribs. the technique, the wrestling technique on display in this match is impeccable.
Yeah.
Abe does the most beautiful application of a hammerlock I think I've ever seen. It might sound stupid, but I must have seen thousands of hammerlocks in almost 40 years of being a wrestling fan. And this one made me go, yeah, that's how it's done. Like the way he has his arms wrapped around Nomura's forearm as he completes the hold and pushes him over is just lovely, wonderful stuff.
There's those Twitter accounts that are like every perfect shots from movies.
Mm.
That you could do something like that for pro wrestling moves and just this match.
Yeah.
The way and the execution is incredible. Mm. Everything is so great.
But not in that kind of clinical, perfect move to move spot way.
Yeah.
Right. There isn't no friction.
Yeah.
It's still a
competition and it's still a fight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like there are some wrestlers who will do lots of like very heavy dodging sequences.
Yes.
Where it's like, oh, I almost hit you with the move and then you almost hit me with the move. And there's no like verisimilitude to it. Right? It's nothing. It's completely weightless. Yeah. Everything here has weight.
Yes.
Everything here feels like it matters.
Mm.
And it's just enrapturing.
So they have a bit of a slap fight before Nomura reverses a headmare and lays in a couple of loud kicks that send Abe out to the floor to have a think about things. Back inside, he tries his hand trickery again, and it works for one slap, precisely one slap, and it just fires Nomura up. And he kicks the shit out of him in the corner, eventually just jumping up and down on Abe with his full weight.
Yeah, there's a couple of times where, in the previous episode, I referred to Kawada having his brand of chiropractic. Nomura at point is trying to carry out cosmetic surgery just via kicks.
Abe grabs a leg lock on the mat and he pulls the best face when Nomura hammer fists him on the forehead to try and get out. Nomura reverses the hold into a heel hook, which Abe rolls halfway to the ropes and, again, as we mentioned, effects his escape with a cancho. Yes, he sticks his finger up Nomura's backside.
But it works perfectly in that kind of, one, Abe is a bit of a goofball, and two, these are mates having a scrap to see who's better. So it works for that storyline.
Yes. Mm. They trade headbutts, which puts Nomura down for a six count, but he comes back with heavy kicks and a half crab that he turns into an ankle lock. Abe's respite comes in the form of a lightning quick dragon screw, a double spin TNA kick in the corner, and a hefty kick to the spine.
The dragon screw in of itself is fantastic because Nomura has been lighting Abe up just before this, and Nomura was threw in a middle kick, then did another flurry where he tried a different kick, and then he's gone for that same middle kick, and Abe has seen it, and the speed of that dragon screw is just sublime.
Yeah.
And again, this is a big Sawa thing as well.
Yeah.
Sawa, he has a Muto parody gimmick. So he would do, like, in his regular wrestling, he would do a lot of dragon screws and shining wizards at about 50 times the speed Muto was ever able to do them. And again, like we talk about, like the wrestling part of wrestling matter. Like, I love this feeling of like these are like combat techniques that have been passed down in these lineages. Like Mark, you mentioned about Nomura doing like Billy Robinson techniques. This idea that these pro wrestling moves are part of the DNA and the texture of these wrestlers.
Yeah.
Marty starts the down count. He only gets as far as one though before Abe runs through with another kick. This starts to count over, and this time we get to two before he does it again. So you're seeing more of his personality coming out. On the third time, Abe pulls him up at five and kicks him so hard he hurts his own leg.
Oh, the selling of this, like at points, Abe is kicking away so hard and he's just selling in agony because he's like, why the fuck am I kicking so hard?
Yeah. Nomura catches the fourth of these kicks as he stands up, turns it into a lovely overhead capture suplex and slaps on a rear naked choke. Again, Abe doesn't rely on technique to get out. He tries to bite, he tries to hair pull, and eventually makes the ropes where Nomura... So Abe is on the mat with his feet under the ropes, kind of in the middle of the ring. And Nomura repeatedly kicks him, until he is in one corner. So he kicks him half the length of the ring into a corner. Yeah.
But what's great is the first couple of kicks, Abe just tries to pettily fight back by just hitting the knee.
Yeah.
Just by like petulantly slapping the knee. And yes, it's like, yeah, that's not going to hold any water, mate. Get in that corner.
Once he has been kicked all the way to the corner, he gets kicked a load more.
Yeah.
They batter each other in this corner until Nomura puts Abe down with what I had to call women's special slap from the SmackDown games. It was always the finisher of always the women, and it was a big slap that would pretty much knock you out.
Shoot style icon, Stephanie McMahon.
Yeah, yes.
Being well represented.
Yes. Abe tries a wild swing, but Nomura swiftly dodges it by millimetres and takes him to the ground in a full Nelson.
Yeah.
He adjusts this hold to use just a single arm so he can get some hits in on Abe's ribs. And Abe, again, has to pull the hair to get out of both that and the subsequent standing guillotine.
So the standing guillotine that you're referring to is actually the Wigan Grovet, which right, is a specific version where if you see how the arm is held, I'm very bad to describe it, but if you Google, if you YouTube search for Wigan Grovet Billy Robinson, you can see videos of him
yes,
showing this hold, and it's the exact same hold.
As you mentioned Billy Robinson earlier, this was the video that came to mind, like him yeah, just going into this gym and showing people this hold, and he's old at this point, and he gets it on, and they just crumple, and like they're tapping instantly.
Yeah,
it's a fun watch, even just from that perspective. So Abe is on Nomura with punches to the forehead and a headbutt. Nomura stops him in his tracks with another slap, and time stands still for a moment as Abe reacts with a face that simultaneously said, he really just did that to me. And that's exactly what I wanted.
Yeah.
Abe, a moment that made me laugh, Abe doubles him over with this big downward forearm over the back of the neck and follows up with like a bowing headbutt to the center of the back that he seems to immediately regret and staggers off to sell himself.
It's so magnificently goofy, but it works because of who he is.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes people like talk about like, oh, what would this wrestler be like in this other context? I would love to see Abe in like Memphis or something like that. Because he's such a ham, and yeah, he plays to like the cheap seats. Mm. Even though it's Shinjuku face, right? There's not that many people, but it's like he's playing to, right? You could put this in Wembley.
Yeah,
and like the people in the further seats would be able to make out the expressions he's pulling.
Yes, yeah, he does have a fabulous face.
Yeah, it's such a great pro wrestling face, right? Leads easily, it's emotive, it's everything you want.
Yeah. Nomura makes up for some of the, I've got to be honest, quite weak looking forearms he's been throwing so far with an absolute belter. But when he tries to get to pro wrestling and run the ropes, Abe meets him with a drop kick right in the face.
Yeah
It's kind of like, oh, you're gonna try pro wrestling, well, I can do that too.
The drop kick is such like a sniper headshot.
Yeah,
it's incredible.
So Abe then goes for the baseball style wind-up punch, which is another Munenori Sawa speciality.
It's something that a lot of Japanese wrestlers seem to love these days.
It's all Sour inspired. Sour was the first one that I remember seeing doing it, because he was it like 2006, 2007 is when I first remembered him doing it.
Sure, because I think of it as something like Kushida does a lot and Hikaru Shida does a lot. Maybe it's just people with Shida.
And also, shout outs to Daniel Makabe, who also does it. It's a big part of his offense too.
So he winds up for this, but Nomura gets a big slap in first and folds him with a German suplex. They get back on their feet. Abe gets the pitch punch, but Nomura runs into him with a headbutt and they both just go down. They are now on the mat just exchanging strikes. Everything from punches to kicks to JYD crawling headbutts.
Yeah.
Abe comes up bloody and clobbers Nomura into the mat with stiff forearms for an 8 count. And then I called it some of the most brutal shit you'll ever see.
Yeah.
He hits a spinning roundhouse kick to the temple that folds Nomura like laundry.
Yeah.
And then while Nomura is on his knees, at the count of three, he connects with another. And then as the count has restarted and gets to seven, Nomura is on all fours. And Abe comes up beside him, grabs him by the... So sitting beside him, kneeling beside him, grabs him by the hair and delivers the most disgusting swinging knee to the side of the jaw. This is the point that I would have called the finish.
I think the knee might be the best looking thing in the match.
It's incredible. I've never seen anybody do this, and it looks incredible.
And from that angle, like swinging around.
Yeah.
So he gets like his full hip movement in it as well. It's so good.
Mm. And they're playing exactly to the hard cam for this spot. So it's like you get everything
they,
in there.
They know where that camera is.
Yeah. TV ready.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a move I want to see makers of future wrestling games motion capture and put in.
Yeah. One thing coming back a little bit is he's done it previously, but there's a point where... So I think Abe comes up bloody from one of these punches to the skull, which I think it was the... like because he's taken a lot of these.
So... in kayfabe, yes. In reality, you can see him poke himself in the head.
Oh, okay.
If you look at his hairline, you can see he has a spot where he likes to blade because no hair grows there.
Yeah.
And I think they very clearly clued in the cameraman because the cameraman is getting a shot of Nomura on his knees clutching
his hand because
Selling his hand. But in the corner, you can just see Abe as he goes down poke himself in the head.
Ah.
Yeah. I've got eyes that spot these things. I can't unsee this kind of stuff.
It was actually the selling of the hand that I was coming back to because I just love that constantly is a thing of because you are punching the hardest part of the human body.
Yes, I did say punch your best friend in the face. Really, they are punching each other in the forehead quite a lot and quite hard at some points, I think.
Oh, yeah. You hit your friends harder.
Yeah, exactly.
You know they can take it.
Yeah. Abe tries to three-quarter Nelson turn Nomura over, but Nomura slickly rolls through into a series of arm locks, ending in a jujigatame, but Abe gets the ropes. He also gets a German suplex and a dragon suplex, resulting in an 8 count. Abe comes back with some more like forearms and slaps, but Nomura is barely budging on any of them and then flattens him with a clothesline.
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely splatted him.
It's almost like a burning lariat, isn't it?
It's very Kobashi.
Short range, winds back, wallops him. When that only gets an 8.9, Nomura tries the big roundhouse kick too, but Abe catches it and turns into... I don't know what this leg hold is called, but I'm pretty sure Ken Shamrock has it in WrestleMania 2000 on the N64.
Is it an Achilles hold?
It might be. It's where like the leg is there. The opponent is face down. You have your arms wrapped around their legs, bending to use a Brian Alvarezism, bending the knee the way it's supposed to go, but also like pushing your whole weight down on it and like pushing forward. Nomura tries to push up out of it, but Abe just slaps down hard on the back of the knee joint to get him back down and reapply it. I really like that.
Yeah.
When Nomura gets to the ropes, Abe still has hold of the leg and does that leg trap German suplex that I really like, I've seen a lot of people do. Followed by the baseball punch again and an octopus hold.
Which, again, is Sauer's old finisher.
Right.
Mm. And I don't think I've seen anyone get an octopus hold on as fast as Abe is able to in this match and just in general, because it can be a little bit awkward sometimes when people put on an octopus, especially if you're off both feet. But he just like the blink of an eye, he's able to slap it on.
He put it on as fast as an actual octopus would. Nomura breaks out of it, turning it into a half crab again. Abe almost gets the ropes twice and then uses the momentum of being pulled back to the center of the ring to turn it over into a heel hook. Nomura tries to punch, slap, and kick his way out, but Abe turns to his stomach, twisting the leg, and Nomura can't take it anymore, and he's forced to tap out.
Nomura's facial expression selling on that was lovely.
Both of them throughout this whole match, like their faces and their selling are absolutely brilliant.
The sense of struggle in that hold, and then all of them in particular. Yeah. No one puts on a headlock. So they can catch their breath and talk about the next few spots, right?
No.
It is a constant sense of fighting and struggle.
No, if someone puts on a headlock, it's to squeeze their opponent's temples and stop them moving. Yeah. So just quickly afterwards, the ring attendants are a pair of young lads. They hit the ring with the cold spray, and Abe playfully gives one of them a slap for crying. you can see a few fans are crying as well. Mm. They do a bit of microphone business and then kneel together in the middle of the ring for the photographers, and Abe is laughing while Nomura looks like he's seen some shit. That the contrast in their facial expressions is brilliant. Eamon, I'm gonna go to you first. Like, given how you practically bit my tweeting finger off when I sent you the DM to come and do this, I presume you really like this match.
I do. I think this match was so special. I'm so happy. Again, I was so happy when Kieran, you sent me the message. I watched this match. I've watched this match like 3 or 4 times now. The first time was in a Burger King airport on the way to, because I was going to go see Royal Quest. The second time I watched it was during Royal Quest. Which New I have Japan, a picture of, I will put up later on with the podcast, because I was like, well, I've already watched a better match than this, I'm just gonna watch that again instead. And then yeah, like rewatched it like 2 more times since, because there are so many great little details in this match, in terms of like trying to get out of holds, ways people are grabbing each other's limbs or ankles, or the way they are twisting things. It feels like celebratory. It feels like you're watching a party. If it, you know, with respect to Super Dragon, it is a violent, you know, this is a violence party. And there's this great sense of just like love in it as well. Of like they would not be going after each other this hard if they did not care about each other. Something comparable I would say that also happened this year were the stuff that Masashi Takeda and Jun Kasai were doing to each other, which was just gruesome bloody brawls, but you always got the sense that they were both delighted to be doing it and doing it with each other. And if I hadn't seen Joe Punk this year in Wembley and had an extremely personal reaction to that match based on my own fandom and the things leading up to it, and especially the things that have happened since it, right? And it being such a special, singular moment in my pro wrestling fandom. If I hadn't seen that match, this would be so comfortably my match of the year. As it is the best match and the main event on the show of the year to me. I cannot imagine anything beating this for show of the year for me. It's a very lean card. I don't think there's anything but like really bad on it. The opener is great. There's a couple of really great tag matches. If people want to see more of these wrestlers, I would really recommend looking up their matches against Strong BJ are probably their most critically acclaimed stuff. And then Abe has done a lot of stuff with WXW over the last couple of years as well. Which actually might be where like a lot of the listeners to this podcast in particular might know him from.
My timeline was a lot of Europeans and the kind of people I know go to WXW going nuts for this.
Like having been like fortunate to see Abe a few times there, and Mark can, you know, having seen him live too, can attest, he comes across even cooler live. Seeing him in like WXW Inner Circle doing like an amazing match with someone like Adam Priest, and then you walk outside and he's sitting there with steam coming off him smoking a cigarette and still in his wrestling gear. And it's like, this is pro wrestling. This is what it's about. And yeah, like any match those guys have, I would say it was almost worth seeking out. Even if the opponents are not always up to scratch, they themselves individually are so great, and are so versatile as well. Those Strong BJ matches where they're kind of underdogs, they had a great brawl this year against another tag team called the Crazy Lovers. That match is on YouTube. I don't think it's supposed to be on YouTube, so maybe go after it. Much like this match is on YouTube, but it probably shouldn't be. Go after them while you can. I said like I think that this match feels like a party and a celebration. It also felt that way on the timeline when it happened. Like you guys like doing like a special bonus episode on it. When Joseph Montecillo gave it 5 stars. on Twitter, and it's
I've not seen him hit 5 stars for anything.
Yeah,
same, right? Yeah. And everyone had this reaction of like, oh shit, Joseph gave this 5 stars, and like Simon from Handwork gave it 3 3/4, which was huge for him.
Everybody has their own scale, man.
It is. Yeah. Everyone has their own scale, but you know, by his standards, that's huge. It's a great edition of Q&T podcast where Tim had Joseph on to talk about the match, and it feels like everyone is so buzzing and happy to get a match like this. There's this great sense of like community around the match now, I almost feel like, where everyone is celebrating it. And it's just great to see, because it's great pro wrestling. So people should watch it.
So I didn't find it as life-changing as a lot of people, partly because I'm quite new to these guys. I don't have any personal connection to them, that kind of thing. I do, however, think it's very good. Eamon earlier on talked about people getting into wrestling for like big characters and big stories and that kind of thing. And I think unless you got into wrestling for those kind of things, or say crazy flips, if you can't find something to enjoy in this match as a fan, I don't know what to tell you. It has comedy, beautiful wrestling technique, hard punches, hard kicks, a finger up the butthole. You know, it has absolutely every part of pro wrestling in under 20 minutes. And it feels like a competition and a fight. Even the rope run and the drop kick don't feel out of place among the hard strikes and the more realistic style of hold application. It's definitely, I don't know if I would pop up to 5 on it, but I think it's something special and different in a world where a lot of pro wrestling has become homogenized.
Yeah.
You know, everybody can now get, not tapes, I'm old, everybody can now see footage from everywhere and incorporate that into their style. I think people are going to be incorporating this into their style now, but until they do, this stands as a beacon, I think.
To come to Kieran's point, I was having a look at, like, what are the cage match matches that are above, say, 9 on cage match for this year, and looking at, like, the top 10, top 12, there's a lot of Kenny Omega, Will Ospreay, Tanahashi, Okada, even Danielson. And honestly, all those of the matches that I've seen for the ones that are there, I'm looking and thinking, well, yeah, I think that was great, but I can't tell you what separated it out from the other one on the list. There was a lot, even to me, now I've not seen the MJF match, but a lot of Bryan Danielson's output this year has kind of felt of a similar style and of a similar ceiling as well.
It kind of goes to what I have said previously about when we look at the peak years of New Japan on this show. Mm. All of these matches are very good, but there were so many of them in such a compressed space, largely involving the same people, I find it hard to remember which was which.
Yeah.
This, I am going to remember who it is, where it was, and when it was for a very long time.
Yes, it stands out where, and you're completely right. It's like most of the top stuff I think that we get these days feels quite homogenous.
Yes.
This did not.
Yes. Mark, the floor is yours.
The irony is, on watching it back after having seen it live, I didn't love it as much as I loved it live.
Sure.
To say something for watching it live, almost immediately afterwards, I'm thinking this is easily in my top 3 of all time live matches.
Nice.
And the other two were Ospreay versus Takagi for the first time in the Best of Super Juniors 2019, which I would say is their best match and was kind of Ospreay at a level where, for people that like him, he's a great pro wrestler now, but the things that kind of irritate me about him were not as prevalent in that match. And I think Takagi is Ospreay's best opponent because he knows how to work around Ospreay's limitations of his style in terms of he needs someone to fill time while he's setting up spots.
Yes.
The other one is the third of the infamous Shingo Takagi versus Susumu Yokosuka trilogy from Dragon Gate UK, which for the people that were there live, the first and third matches were just mind-blowing. Yes. And yes. Even the second one, I know a lot of people are down on the second one. I'm not as much because I remember, again, this is a personal connection. I remember being there live in the front row with my mates and we were collectively losing our shit.
The second one is good. The first is excellent. The third is exceptional.
Yeah.
With that trilogy. Even if you haven't seen the other two, the third match, just as a standalone, it's an incredible piece of work.
Yeah. Yeah. So those are the levels of my other two matches. This is kind of the level that I'm putting it in. Like from this year, I'm thinking, what have I seen this year? So I've been to AEW Wembley. I've done the Rev Pro show that had the great Ishii versus Luke Jacobs match, which I loved because I'm a big Ishii fan and I do like seeing younger British guys get an opportunity. Mm. And sometimes they don't eventually disappoint you with their life choices. But what I'll say is, yeah, live, this was like, I was openly laughing like Milano Collection AT laughs on commentary. And by that, I mean, I've seen something ridiculous and the only reaction is just to laugh in incredulity.
Yes.
With the exception of one show, which was outdoors, every show I went to on this trip, I was masked in the venue because I thought it was sensible for me and for other people. And that kind of tempered how much I was vocally getting into shows, of course.
Mm.
I was just screaming by the end of this match. I was yelling. I was so excited. You could tell, like, you could see and hear people just laughing in joy, just loving this experience. And for me, this is a match where it's two things. The first thing is, this is two friends who decided to wrestle in a style that they both clearly love, or Abe definitely clearly loves, and to see how far they can go, what they can do, and they are pushing each other. Mm. They are pushing each other both professionally and in the story perspective, because that is the story of the match, is we want to see who's better and we'll do whatever we can to prove it.
Mm.
For me, the other element is, this felt like these are two guys who have seen that their idols, Daisuke Okada and Yuki Shikawa, who had this legendary violent rivalry, they've seen that these guys are old. They're getting older. And it almost feels like, can we take that mantle? Can we seize that mantle and can we be that rivalry? And this kind of felt like it could be the first step to them doing that, them becoming that generational, you want to see wrestling at its most violent and brutal, watch this. It kind of felt them stepping up, and yet they are also best friends and tag team partners. And it just clicks. You're right, there has to be a level of connection. And partly because of Abe, there is a level of goofiness throughout this match, which I think a lot of people will dislike, and I've seen it as a criticism. But I think it almost makes it better because it makes it stand out. It's that level of, this is who this guy is.
Yeah, it's entirely personality and like within what I know of his character. It's not like he's doing fucking Florida Brothers sprots.
Like, if only.
Well,
but yeah, it's texture, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It makes it more specific.
Yeah, everybody's face contorts the same way when they get slapped. Not everybody has the same reaction.
Yeah,
and again, it's breaking free of the homogenization.
And as I say, this is an incredibly violent match. There's like 8 head-on-head headbutts. I counted them. There's probably at least 3 times as many punches to the forehead, if not more. So this is a very violent match, and yet almost as much praise needs to be put on the sheer quality of the technique and the execution.
Yeah,
because there's some like, as Kieran said, like things like the hammerlock, like that quick dragon screw, the full Nelson sequence. There's an incredible Wakigatame counter by Nomura. Even how Nomura gets out of the octopus stretch to get into the single leg crab. I've never seen someone counter it that way before.
Mm.
This is just two top level professional wrestlers. that have decided to do something different to what they've done before, and it just works. And it's like, this will not be for everyone, I think, but there is going to be a lot of people where it just clicks. And this, as Kieran said, this is something that stands out from everything else, and it's the kind of match that people, a kind of a bit like Dragunov versus Walter, it's that kind of, it stands out from everything else at the time.
Do you know what? That was in my head as I was watching this, like mostly from the brutality point of view. This did not make me feel half as sick as that match did. This would be the match those two would have if they were in kayfabe friends rather than in kayfabe enemies.
Good point. Very good point.
And I think the other way also holds true. Like if Nomura and Abe were like long-time rivals and hated each other in storyline, the Volta Ilya match is the match that they would have.
Yeah.
Obviously not with the size difference, but you know what I mean, like the same kind of level of brutality and hatred going into it. Yeah. So 9.34 on Cage Match. I think it's an unequivocal recommendation from this show. We wouldn't have done a special episode about it if we didn't think it was a special match that we thought everybody should see.
Yeah.
I would love to get this in front of Brian Danielson so that he goes to Tony Khan and says, hey, I want to have a match with each of these men on my retirement tour, please.
Oh, please do. Please do. Please do.
We need it. Yeah.
And yes, Mark is very briefly visible at the end as Abe is celebrating.
Oh, am I?
Yes, I could see you happily waving your arms in the air. So that is the end of the show. Eamon, thank you so much for coming and talking about it with us. The floor is yours to put your messages out there and tell people where they can find you if you want to be found, all that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, guys, listen, first of all, again, thank you so much for having me. This was such a blast and so much fun to do, talking about like two wrestlers. I don't think I said this on the show, but I said it to you guys offline or off air that these guys are so good. I don't like watching them too much because they spoil other wrestling. and getting them to talk about you guys, and hopefully in conjunction with all the great buzz it's been getting in our various circles to encourage more people to seek them out. If people would like to see more Battle Arts itself, there's a lot of it on YouTube and a lot of it on Daily Motion.
Yes.
So it's pretty easy to track down. There's a shocking amount of it on IWTV. I don't know how Dean Gerard swung that one, but it's up there.
Maybe they just weren't charging much for the tapes.
I guess, but it's up there and it's sick. So yeah, if you want to see just some really, really great pro wrestling, I don't think a Battle Arts show will ever disappoint you. In terms of things to promote, as always, I'm too lazy to commit to any projects myself, which is why I'm happy to leech off of my friends who are more committed. But yeah, you can find me on Twitter at ByBoyParm. That'll do it for me, guys.
Okay. Tremendous. I hope you get lots of followers.
Dusk Pro Wrestling.
As for us, you can go to linktr.ee/mustymatches for all the ways to subscribe, links to the full list of nominations and a whole load more. We are at Musty Matches on Twitter, Instagram, Threads and Blue Sky. And on Discord, if you go to bit.ly/mustymatchesdiscord, you can come and have a chat with us there. I am at Kieran Edits on Twitter and Mark is
at monkey_buckles.
I'm also going to throw out a plug for the other podcast I have started, which is called Nothing and Like It, and it's about the history of Britain's Frontier Wrestling Alliance on TV. I do that with Eddie Sideburns and Andy Ogden, and if you go to at FWAPod on Twitter, you can find that, or linktr.ee/FWAPod for all the ways to subscribe to that. And we will be back at the weekend with another regular episode. We'll see you then. Goodbye.